Chapter 19. Talk of Dragons. Matt tugged on a sturdy brown coat. The buttons were brass, but other than that, it was free of ornamentation. Made of thick wool, it had a few holes from arrows that really should have killed him. One of the holes had a bloodstain around it, but that had mostly been washed out. It was a nice coat. He would have paid good coin for a coat like this one when he lived back in the Two Rivers. He rubbed his face, looking in the mirror of his new tent. He had shaved off that bloody beard, finally. How did Perrin manage that bloody itching? The man must have sandpaper for skin. Well, Matt would find another way to disguise himself when needed. He had nicked himself a few times while shaving, but it was not as if he had forgotten how to take care of himself. He did not need a manservant to do what he could manage on his own. Nodding to himself, he pulled on his hat and grabbed his Ashandarai from the corner of the tent. The ravens on the blade seemed to perch excitedly in anticipation of battles to come. "Bloody right you do," Matt said, resting the Ashandarai on his shoulder as he walked out of the tent. He grabbed his pack and slung it over his other shoulder. Starting tonight, he would be spending nights in the city. He strode through camp, nodding to a group of passing red arms. He had doubled the watch. He was worried about the Golam, but also about the many military camps in the area. Half were mercenaries, half were the retainers of this minor lord or that, coming to pay respects to the queen, suspiciously arriving after the fighting was done. No doubt each and every one was professing his heartfelt allegiance to Elaine, explaining that his men supported her all along. Their words probably fell a little flat since Matt had it on good authority from three separate drunks in taverns that Elaine had used traveling extensively in recruiting her defense. It was easier to feign a delayed arrival when you were responding to a written message.
"Matt! Matt!"
Matt stopped on the pathway outside his tent as Olver came racing up. The boy had taken to wearing a red band around his arm, much as the red arms did, but he still wore his brown trousers and coat. He was carrying his rolled-up cloth for snakes and foxes under one arm and a pack slung over the other. Satala stood in the near distance, along with Lucin and Eder, two red arms that Matt had assigned to watch over her and the boy. They'd be departing for the city soon.
"Matt," Olver said, panting. "You're leaving?"
"I don't have time to play with you now, Olver," Matt said, lowering his Ashandarai to the crook of his arm. "I have to go meet with the queen."
"I know,"
Olver said.
"I figured that since we're both going to town, we could ride together and plan. I have some ideas about how to defeat the snakes and the foxes." "We're gonna show them, Matt. Burn me, but we bloody will."
"Who taught you that language?"
"Matt," he said, "this is important. We have to plan. We haven't talked about what we're going to do."
Silently, Matt cursed himself for discussing the quest to rescue Moraine where Olver could hear. The boy was not going to take it well when he was left behind.
"I need to think about what I'm going to say to the queen," Matt said, rubbing his chin. "But I guess you're right. Planning is important. Why don't you go tell Noel about your ideas?"
"I already did," Olver said. "And Tom, too. And Talmanis."
Talmanis? He was not going with them into the tower. Light, how much had Olver been spreading the news around?
"Olver," Matt said, squatting down to be on eye level with the boy. "You need to keep quieter. We don't want too many people knowing what we're doing."
"I didn't tell nobody we don't trust, Matt," Olver said. "Don't worry. Most were red arms."
Great, Matt thought. What would the soldiers think of their commander planning to go off and fight a bunch of creatures from children's stories? Hopefully they would see Olver's comments as the fancies of a young boy.
"Just be careful," Matt said.
"I'll come stop by your inn tomorrow and we can play a game then and talk about it, all right?" Olver nodded.
"All right, Matt. But blood and bloody ashes."
He turned and walked away.
"And stop swearing,"
Matt called after him, then shook his head. Bloody soldiers would have Olver corrupted by the time he was 12.
Matt continued on his way, leaning his spear on his shoulder again. He found Tom and Telmanis mounted at the front of the camp along with a force of 50 Red Arms. Tom wore an extravagant wine-red coat and trousers, gold work at the arms, with a shirt bearing white lace at the cuffs and a silken cravat tied at the neck. The buttons were of gleaming gold. His mustaches had been trimmed and neatly combed. The entire outfit was new, including the black cloak, its inner lining of gold. Matt froze in place. How had the man so perfectly transformed from an old scamp of a gleeman into a royal courtier? Light.
"I see from your reaction that the presentation is effective," Tom said.
"Blood and bloody ashes," Matt exclaimed. "What happened? Did you take ill from a bad sausage at breakfast?"
Tom whipped his cloak back, revealing that he had his harp out and at his side. He looked like a court bard.
"I figured that if, after all of these years, I was going to make an appearance in Camelon, I should look the part."
"No wonder you've been singing for coin every day," Matt said. "The people in those taverns have way too much money."
Telmanis raised an eyebrow, as good as a grin from that man. At times he seemed so dour as to make thunderclouds feel cheerful. He also wore a fine outfit, his of deep cobalt and silver. Matt felt at his cuffs. He could have used some lace. If Lopin had been here, he would have set out the proper outfit without Matt even asking. A little lace was good for a man. Made him look presentable.
"Is that what you're wearing to visit the Queen, Matt?"
Telmanis asked.
"Of course it is."
The words left his mouth before he had a chance to think about them.
"It's a good coat."
He walked over to take Pips's reins.
"Good for sparring in, maybe," Telmanis said. "Elaine is the Queen of Andor now, Matt," Tom said, "and queens are a particular lot. You should show her respect."
"I am showing her bloody respect," Matt said, handing his spear to one of the soldiers, then climbing into the saddle.
He took the spear back, then turned Pips so he could regard Tom.
"This is a good enough coat for a farmer."
"You're not a farmer anymore, Matt,"
Telmanis said.
"I am too," Matt said stubbornly.
"But Musenge called you—"
Tom began.
"He was mistaken," Matt said. "Just because a man marries someone doesn't mean he suddenly becomes bloody nobility."
Tom and Telmanis exchanged a look.
"Matt," Tom said, "that's actually exactly how it works. It's pretty much one of the only ways to become nobility."
"That's the way we do it here, maybe," Matt said, "but Tuon is from Shanchen. Who knows what they do there? We all know how strange they can be. We can't know anything until we talk to her."
Tom frowned.
"I'm certain from things she said that—"
"We can't know anything until we talk to Tuon," Matt repeated, louder this time. "Until then, I'm Matt. None of this Prince of Whatever nonsense."
Tom looked confused, but Telmanis's lips turned ever so slightly up at the side.
"Burn that man."
Matt was inclined to think his solemn nature was all an act. Was he secretly laughing inside?
"Well, Matt," Telmanis said, "you never have made any sense, so why should we expect you to now? Onward, then, to meet the Queen of Andor. Certain you don't want to roll in the mud first?"
"I'll be fine," Matt said dryly, pulling his hat down as a soldier tied his pack to the back of his saddle.
He kicked Pips into motion, and the procession began the now familiar ride to Camelon. Matt spent most of the time going over his plan in his head. He had Aludra's papers tucked into a leather folder, and they included her demands. Every Bellfounder in Camelon, large quantities of bronze and iron, and powders worth thousands of crowns. And she claimed that was the minimum of what she needed. How under the light was Matt going to get bloody Elaine Trakand to give him all that? He would have to do a lot of smiling. But Elaine had proven resistant to his smiles before, and queens were not like ordinary folk. Most women, they would smile back, or they would scowl at you so you knew where you stood. Elaine seemed the type to smile at you, then toss you in prison all the same. For once, it would be nice if his luck could see him off somewhere enjoying a pipe and a game of dice, with a pretty serving girl on his knee and no cares beyond his next throw. Instead, he was married to a Shonchan highblood and was off to beg the Queen of Andor for her help. How did he get into these situations? Sometimes he thought that the Creator must be like Talmanis, straight of face but secretly having a grand time laughing at Matt. His procession passed numerous camps on the open plains around Camelon. All mercenaries were required to stay at least a league away, but the forces of the lords could camp closer. That put Matt in a rough place. There was always tension between sellswords and loyal armsmen, and with the mercenaries so far from Camelon, fights were common. The band was right in the middle of it. He did some quick figuring based on the trails of campfire smoke he saw twisting into the air. There were at least 10,000 mercenaries in the area. Did Elaine know what a bubbling kettle she was brewing here? Too much heat and the whole bloody thing would boil over. Matt's procession drew attention. He had one of the men flying the banner of the Band of the Red Hand, and his men were developing a reputation. By Matt's count, they were the largest single group, mercenary or lord's force, outside Camelon's walls. They were as organized and disciplined as a regular army, and were under the leadership of a personal friend of the Dragon Reborn. His men could not help bragging about that, though Matt would much rather that they had kept quiet. They passed groups of men waiting by the side of the road, curious to catch a glimpse of Lord Matt. He kept his eyes forward. If they had expected some fop in a rich coat, then they would be disappointed, though perhaps he could have chosen a better coat. This one was stiff, and the collar itched. Of course, more than a few seemed to think Talmanis was Lord Matt, from the way they pointed, probably because of how he was dressed. Bloody ashes. This conversation with Elaine was going to be tough, but Matt had a hidden card, one he hoped would be enough to get her to look past the expense of Aludra's proposal. Though he was more afraid she would see what he was doing and want to take part in it. And when a woman wanted to be part of something, that meant she wanted to be in charge. They approached the gate in Camelon's white-gray walls, passing the growing outer city. The soldiers waved him on. Matt gave a tip of the hat, and Tom gave a flourishing wave to the small crowd gathered here. They cheered. Great. Just bloody great. The march through the new city was uneventful, save for more crowds watching. Would someone recognize his face from those drawings? Matt wanted to get off the main thoroughfares, but Camelon's narrow streets were a twisting mess. A force of 50 horsemen was too large to move through those streets. They eventually passed through the brilliant white walls of the inner city, where the roads were wider, the Ogier-built buildings less cramped, and the population thinner. Here they passed more groups of armed men, including guardsmen in white and red. Matt could make their camp out ahead, covering the gray paving stones of the courtyard with their tents and horse lines. The Camelon Palace was like another little city within the city inside the city. It had a low fortified wall, and while its peaks and spires rose into the air, it had more of the look of a war bunker than the Sun Palace did. Odd how he had never noticed that when he was younger. If Camelon fell, this palace could hold on its own. They needed more barracks, though, within that wall. This camping out in the courtyard was ridiculous. Matt took Talmanis, Tom, and a force of 10 red arms as an escort. A tall man in a burnished breastplate, 3 golden knots on the shoulder of his cloak, waited at the palace entrance. He was a young man, but the way he stood, relaxed yet poised, hand on the pommel of his sword, indicated he was a practiced soldier. Too bad he had such a pretty face. A life in the military would probably end up wrecking that. He nodded to Matt, Tom, and Talmanis. "Lord Cawthon?" he asked Matt. "Just Matt." The man raised an eyebrow but said nothing.
"My name is Charles Gibbon. I'll lead you to Her Majesty."
She had sent Gaibon himself to escort Matt. He was high-ranking, second in command of the armies. That was unexpected. Was Elaine afraid of him, or was she honoring him? Maybe Gaibon had wanted to see Matt for himself. She would not honor Matt, not after making him wait so long to get an audience. A fine greeting for an old friend. His suspicions were confirmed when Gaibon did not lead them to the Grand Hall, but down to a quiet area of the palace.
"I've heard much about you, Master Cawthon," Gaibon said.
He seemed like one of those stiff soldiers, solid but maybe a little too solid, like a bow without enough spring to it.
"From who?" Matt asked. "Elaine?" "Mostly rumors around the city. People like to talk about you."
"They do?" Matt thought. "I didn't do half of what they say," he grumbled, "and the other half wasn't my bloody fault." Gaibon laughed.
"What of the story of you hanging from a tree for 9 days?
"Didn't happen," Matt said, resisting the urge to tug at the scarf around his neck. 9 days? Where did that come from? He had not even hung for 9 bloody minutes. 9 seconds had been too long.
"They also say," Gaibon continued, "that you never lose at dice or at love, and that your spear never misses its target."
"Wish those second two were true. Burn me, but I wish they were."
"But you do always win at dice?"
"Near enough," Matt said, tugging down the brim of his hat. "But don't spread that one, or I'll never find a game."
"They say you slew one of the Forsaken," Gaibon noted.
"Not true," Matt said. Where had that one come from?
"And the stories of you dueling the king of the Aiel invaders in a battle of honor? Did you really win the Dragon Reborn the loyalty of the Aiel?"
"Bloody ashes," Matt said. "I killed Cooladin, but it didn't happen in any kind of duel. I ran into him on the battlefield, and one of us had to die. It wasn't bloody well going to be me."
"Interesting," Gaibon said. "I thought that one might be true. At least it's one of the few that could have happened. Unlike..."
He trailed off.
"What?"
Matt said. They passed an intersection of halls where servants grouped, watching him and the others pass and whispering among themselves. Gaibon looked hesitant.
"I'm sure you've heard."
"Doubtful. Burn him, what was next? Had the members of the band been spreading these rumors? Even they did not know about some of those things."
"Well, there's this rumor that says you stepped into Death's domain to challenge him and demand answers to your questions," Gaibon said, looking more embarrassed. "And that he gave you that spear you hold and foretold to you your own death."
Matt felt a chill. That one was close enough to the truth to be frightening.
"Silly, I know," Gaibon said.
"Sure," Matt said. "Silly." He tried to laugh, but it came out as a cough. Gaibon regarded him curiously. "Light," Matt realized. "He thinks I'm dodging the question."
"Only rumors, of course," Matt said quickly.
"Too quickly, maybe.
Blood and bloody ashes."
Gaibon nodded, looking thoughtful. Matt wanted to change the topic, but he did not trust himself to open his bloody mouth. He could see that more and more palace servants had stopped to watch the procession. He felt like cursing some more at that, but then noticed that many of them did not seem focused on him, but on Tom. Tom had been court-barred right here in Camelin. He did not talk about it, but Matt knew he had suffered a falling out with the Queen. Tom had been in virtual exile ever since, coming to Camelin only when pressed. Morghese was dead now, so this was Tom returning from his exile, it seemed. That was probably why he had dressed so finely. Matt looked down at his coat again.
"Burn me, I should have worn something nicer."
Gaibon led them to a carved wooden door bearing the roaring lion of Andor. He knocked softly, received the call to enter, then gestured Matt toward the door.
"The Queen will receive you in her sitting room."
"Tom, you're with me," Matt said. "Talmanis, you watch the soldiers. The nobleman looked crestfallen, but Elaine was undoubtedly going to embarrass Matt, and he did not want Telmanis there to see.
"I'll introduce you later," Matt promised.
Bloody nobleman. They thought every second thing was an affront to their honor. Matt would have been happy to wait outside. Matt stepped up to the door, taking a deep breath. He had fought in dozens of skirmishes and battles without growing nervous. Now his hands were shaking. Why did he feel as if he were walking directly into an ambush without a scrap of armor on? Elaine, as queen. Burn him, but this was going to hurt. He opened the door and strode in. His eyes found Elaine immediately. She sat beside a hearth, holding a cup of what appeared to be milk. She looked radiant in a gown of deep red and gold. Beautiful, full red lips that Matt would not have minded kissing if he had not been a married man. Her red-gold hair seemed to shimmer in the hearth light, and her cheeks were full of color. She seemed to have gained a little weight. Best not to mention that. Or should he? Sometimes women got angry when you mentioned that they looked different, and sometimes they got angry if you did not notice. She was a pretty thing. Not as pretty as Tuan, of course. Elaine was far too pale and too tall, and had too much hair. It was distracting. Still, she was pretty. Seemed a waste as a queen. She would have made an excellent serving girl. Ah, well, somebody had to be queen. Matt glanced at Birgitta, who was the only other one in the room. She looked the same. Always did. With that golden braid and high boots. Like the hero from the bloody stories. Which was exactly what she was. It was good to see her again. She was one woman he knew who would not snap at him for speaking the truth. Tom stepped in beside him, and Matt cleared his throat. She would expect him to be formal. Well, he was not going to bow or scrape, and he... Elaine leaped out of her chair. She ran across the room as Birgitta closed the door.
Tom, I'm so glad you're all right.
Elaine grabbed him in an embrace.
Hello, dear one, Tom said fondly. I hear you've done well for yourself, and for Andor.
Elaine was crying. Matt pulled off his hat, befuddled. Sure, Tom and Elaine had been close, but Elaine was queen now. Elaine turned toward Matt.
It's good to see you, Matt. Do not think that the crown has forgotten your service to me. Bringing Tom back to Andor is another debt we owe you.
Well, Matt said. It really wasn't anything, you know, Elaine. Burn me, your queen. How's that feel?
Elaine laughed, finally releasing Tom.
Such a way with words you have, Matt.
I'm not going to bow to you or anything, he warned, or bother with that Your Majesty nonsense.
I wouldn't expect it, Elaine said. Unless we're in public, of course. I mean, I have to keep up appearances for the people.
I suppose that's true, Matt agreed.
It did make sense. He held out a hand to Birgitta, but she chuckled and gave him a hug, slapping him on the back like an old pal meeting for a mug of ale.
And, well, perhaps that was what they were. Without the ale. He could have used some ale.
Come sit,
Elaine said, gesturing toward the chairs by the fire.
I'm sorry to make you wait so long, Matt.
It's nothing, he said. You're busy.
It's embarrassing, she said. One of my stewards lumped you with the mercenary groups. It's so hard to keep track of them all. If you wish, I'll give you leave to camp closer to the city. There's not room inside the walls for the band, I'm afraid.
That won't be needed, Matt said, taking one of the seats. Letting us move closer is kind enough, thank you.
Tom sat, and Birgitta preferred to stand, though she did join them by the hearth, leaning back against the stones.
You look well, Elaine, Tom said. Is everything going well with the child?
Children, Elaine corrected. There will be twins, and yes, everything is well, save for me having to be poked and prodded at nearly every opportunity.
Wait, Matt said. What?
He glanced again at Elaine's stomach. Tom rolled his eyes.
Don't you ever listen when you're in the city gambling?
I listen, Matt muttered. Usually. He looked accusingly at Elaine.
Does Rand know about this?
She laughed.
I should hope he isn't too surprised.
Burn me, Matt said. He's the father.
The father of my children is a matter of some speculation in the city, Elaine said solemnly. And the Crown prefers there to be speculation for the time. But enough about me. Tom, you have to tell me everything. How did you escape Abu Dhar?
Forget Abu Dhar, Birgitta snapped. How's Oliver? Did you find him?
We did, Tom said. And he is well, though I fear the lad is destined for life as a professional soldier.
Not a bad life, Birgitta said. Eh, Matt?
There are worse, he said, still trying to get his legs underneath him. How had becoming queen made Elaine less high and mighty? Had he missed something? She actually seemed agreeable now. Well, that was unfair. There were times when she had been agreeable before. They had merely been mixed between times when she had been ordering Matt around. He found himself smiling as Tom related the details of their escape and the capture of Tuon, followed by their travels with Master Luca's menagerie. Drawn from the quiver of a storyteller, the tale sounded a whole lot more impressive than it had been to Liv. Matt almost thought himself a hero, listening to Tom. Right before Tom got to the part about Tuon's marriage words, however, Matt coughed and cut in.
And we beat the Shan Chan, fled into Murundi, and eventually found an Aes Sedai to get us here through a gateway. By the way, have you seen Varen lately?
No, Elaine said.
Tom eyed Matt with amusement. Blast, Matt said. Well, there went his chance to use her for a gateway to the Tower of Genji. He would worry about that later. He took the leather envelope from his belt, then opened it, taking out Aludra's papers.
Elaine, he said, I need to talk to you.
Yes, you mentioned Bellfounders in your letter. What trouble have you gotten yourself into, Matram Cawthon?
That's not fair at all, he said, spreading out the sheets. I'm not the one who gets into trouble. If I...
You're not going to mention my getting captured in the Stone of Tyr again, are you? She asked with a roll of her eyes.
He stopped.
Of course not. That happened ages ago. I barely remember it.
She laughed, the pretty sound ringing in the room. He felt himself blushing.
Anyway, I'm not in trouble. I just need some resources.
What kind of resources? Elaine asked, growing curious as he spread out the papers on the table next to her chair.
Birgitta leaned down.
Well, Matt said, rubbing his chin, there are three Bellfounders in the city. I'll need those, and we're going to need some powders. They're listed on this page, and we'll need a little bit of metal.
He winced and handed her one of Aludra's lists. Elaine read the page, then blinked.
Are you mad?
Sometimes I think I might be, he said. But burn me, I think this will be worth the cost.
What is it?
Elaine asked as Birgitta looked over one of the sheets, then handed it to Elaine.
Aludra calls them dragons, Matt said.
Tom says you knew her?
Yes, I did, Elaine said.
Well, these are launching tubes, like the ones for her fireworks. Only they're made of metal and they're big. And instead of launching night flowers, they launch these head-sized chunks of iron.
Why would you want to launch chunks of iron up into the air?
Elaine said, frown deepening.
You don't,
Birgitta said, eyes opening wide.
You launch them at someone else's army.
Matt nodded.
Aludra claims that one of these dragons could launch an iron ball as far as a mile.
Mother's milk in a cup, Birgitta said. You can't be serious.
She is, Matt said, and I believe her. You should see what she's created already, and she claims these will be her masterpiece. Look, she shows here the dragons firing on a city wall from a mile away. With 50 dragons and 250 soldiers, she could knock down a wall like the one around Camelin in a few hours.
Elaine looked pale. Did she believe him? Would she be angry at him for wasting her time? I know that won't be of much use in the last battle, Matt said quickly. Trollocs don't have walls. But look here. I had her design a spreading shot. Fire down a line of Trollocs from 400 paces, and one of these dragons will do the work of 50 bowmen. Burn me, Elaine, but we're going to be at a disadvantage. The shadow can always toss more Trollocs at us than we have soldiers, and the bloody things are twice as hard to kill as a man. We need an advantage. I remember... He cut himself off. He had been about to say he remembered the Trolloc Wars, which would not have been a good idea. A man could start some embarrassing rumors that way. Look, he said, I know this sounds outrageous, but you have to give it a chance. She looked up at him, and... Was she crying again? What had he done? Matt, I could kiss you, she declared. This is exactly what I needed. Matt blinked. What? Birgitta chuckled. First Nori, now Matt. You'll have to watch yourself, Elaine. Rand will be jealous. Elaine snorted, looking down at the plans. The Bellfounders aren't going to like this. Most of the craftsmen were looking forward to getting back to daily work, following the siege. Oh, I don't know about that, Elaine, Birgitta said. I've known a craftsman or two in my time. To a person, they complain about royal privilege during war, but as long as the crown compensates them, they're secretly happy. Steady work is always appreciated. Besides, something like this will make them curious. We'll have to keep it secret, Elaine said. So you'll do it? Matt asked, surprised. He had not needed his secret bribe to distract her. We'll need proof of one working first, of course, Elaine said. But if these devices, these dragons, work half as well as Aludra claims, well, I'd be a fool not to put every man on them we can. That's right generous of you, Matt said, scratching his head. Elaine hesitated. Generous? Building these for the band. For the band? Matt, these will be for Andor. Here now, Matt said. These are my plans. And my resources, Elaine said. She sat up straight, suddenly becoming more poised. Surely you see that the Crown could offer a more stable and useful control for the deployment of these weapons? To the side, Tom was grinning. What are you so happy about? Matt demanded. Nothing, Tom said.
You do your mother proud, Elaine.
Thank you, Tom, she said, favoring him with a smile. Whose side are you on? Matt said.
Everyone's, Tom said.
That's not a bloody side, Matt said, then looked back to Elaine. I put a lot of effort and thought into getting these plans out of Aludra. I've nothing against Andor, but I don't trust anyone with these weapons who isn't me. And if the band were part of Andor? Elaine asked. She really did sound like a queen all of a sudden. The band is beholden to nobody, Matt said. That is admirable, Matt, Elaine said. But it makes you mercenaries. I think that the band deserves something more, something better. With official backing, you would have access to resources and authority. We could give you a commission in Andor, with your own command structure. It was actually tempting. Just a little. But it did not matter. He did not think Elaine would be happy to have him in her realm once she knew of his relationship with the Shan-Chan. He meant to return to Tuon eventually, somehow, if only to work out what she really felt about him. He had no intention of giving the Shan-Chan access to these dragons, but he did not fancy giving them to Andor either. Unfortunately, he had to admit that there was no way he was going to have Andor build them without giving the weapons to the nation, too. I don't want a commission for the band, Matt said. We're free men, and that's how we like it. Elaine looked troubled. But I'd be willing to split the dragons with you, Matt said. Some for us, some for you. What if, Elaine said, I built all of the dragons and owned all of them, but promised that only the band could use them. No other forces would have access to them. That would be kind of you, Matt said. Suspicious, though.
No offense.
It would be better for me if the noble houses didn't have these, at least not at first. They will spread eventually. Weapons always do. I build them and promise to give them to the band. No commission, just a contract. Hiring you for a long term. You can go at any time. But if you do, you leave the dragons behind.
Matt frowned. Feels like you're wrapping a chain around my neck, Elaine.
I'm only suggesting reasonable solutions.
The day you become reasonable is the day I eat my hat, Matt said. No offense. Elaine raised an eyebrow at him. Yes, she had become a queen, just like that. I want the right to keep a few of these dragons, Matt said, if we leave. One quarter to us, three quarters to you. But we'll take your contract, and while we're in your employ, only we use them, as you said. Her frown deepened. Burn him, but she had grasped the power of those dragons quickly. He could not let her hesitate now. They needed the dragons to go into production immediately, and he was not about to let the chance of having them pass the band by. Sighing to himself, Matt reached up and undid the strap at the back of his neck, then pulled the familiar foxhead medallion out of his shirt. The second he removed it, he felt more naked than if he had stripped bare. He set it on the table. Elaine glanced at it, and he could see a flash of desire in her eyes.
What is that for?
It's a sweetener, Matt said, leaning forward, elbows on knees. You get it for one day if you agree to start production on a prototype dragon this evening. I don't care what you do with the medallion. Study it, write a bloody book about it, wear it about. But you return it tomorrow. Your word on it.
Birgitta whistled slowly. Elaine had wanted to get her hands on that medallion the moment she discovered he had it. Of course, so had every other bloody Aes Sedai that Matt had met.
I get the band in at least a one-year contract, Elaine said. Renewable. We'll pay you whatever you were earning in Murundi. How did she know about that? You can cancel, she continued, as long as you provide a month's warning. But I keep four dragons out of five, and any men who wish to join the Andoran military must be given the chance. I want one out of four, Matt said, and a new serving man.
A what? Elaine said.
A serving man, Matt said. You know, to take care of my clothing.
You'd do a better job of picking than I would. Elaine looked at his coat, then up at his hair.
That, she said, I'll give you regardless of how the other negotiations go.
One out of four, Matt said.
I get the medallion for 3 days.
He shivered. 3 days, with the Golem in town. She would have him dead. It was already a gamble to give it to her for a day, but he could not think of anything else he could offer.
What do you even think you can do with the thing? He asked.
Copy it,
Elaine said absently.
If I'm lucky.
Really?
I won't know until I study it.
Matt suddenly had the horrifying image of every Aes Sedai in the world wearing one of those medallions. He shared a look with Tom, who seemed equally surprised to hear this. But what did it matter? Matt could not channel. Before, he had worried that, if she studied it, Elaine might figure a way to touch him with the one power when he was wearing it. But if she just wanted to copy it... Well, he found himself relieved. And intrigued.
There's been something I've been meaning to mention, Elaine, he said. The Golem is here. In town. It's been killing people.
Elaine remained calm, but he could tell from the way she was even more formal when she spoke that the news worried her.
Then I will be certain to return the medallion to you on time, he grimaced.
All right, he said. 3 days.
Very well, she said. I want the band to start immediately. I'll be traveling to Kyrian soon, and I have a feeling they would be a better support force than the Queen's Guard.
So that was what this was about. Elaine was moving on to the Sun Throne. Well, that seemed a good use for the men, at least until Matt needed them. Better than letting them sit around getting lazy and picking fights with sellswords.
I agree to that, Matt said. But Elaine,
The band has to be free to fight in the last battle, however Rand wants. And Aludra has to supervise the dragons. I have a feeling that she'll insist that she remain with you if the band breaks off from Andor.
I have no issues with that, Elaine said, smiling.
I figured you wouldn't. But just so we're clear, the band has control of the dragons until we leave. You can't sell the technology to others.
Someone will replicate it, Matt, she said.
Copies won't be as good as Aludra's, Matt said. I promise you that.
Elaine studied him, blue eyes weighing him, judging him. I'd still rather have the band as a fully commissioned Andorran force.
Well, I wish I had a hat made all of gold, a tent that could fly, and a horse that leaves droppings of diamonds. But we'll both have to settle with what's reasonable, won't we?
It wouldn't be unreasonable to...
We'd have to do what you said, Elaine, Matt replied. I won't have it. Some battles aren't worth fighting, and I'm going to decide when my men put themselves at risk. That's that.
I don't like having men who could leave me at any time.
You know I won't hold them back merely to spite you, Matt said. I'll do what's right.
What you see as being right, she corrected.
Every man should have that option, he replied.
Few men use it wisely.
We want it anyway, Matt said. We demand it.
She glanced, almost imperceptibly, toward the plans and the medallion on the table. You have it, she said.
Deal, he said, standing up, spitting in his hand and holding it out.
She hesitated, stood and spat in her hand, then held it out to him. He smiled and shook it. Did you know that I might ask you to take arms against the Two Rivers? She asked. Is that why you demanded the right to leave if you want?
Against the Two Rivers?
Why under the light would she want to do that?
You don't need to fight them, Elaine.
We shall see what Perrin forces me to do, she replied. But let's not discuss that right now.
She glanced at Tom, then reached under her table and pulled out a rolled piece of paper with a ribbon about it.
Please, I want to hear more of what happened during your trip out of Ebu Dar. Will you take dinner with me this evening?
We'd be delighted, Tom said, standing. Wouldn't we, Matt?
I suppose, Matt said. If Telmanis can come. He'll tear my throat out if I don't at least let him meet you, Elaine. Taking dinner with you will have him dancing all the way back to the camp.
Elaine chuckled. As you wish. I'll have servants show you to some rooms where you can rest until the time arrives. She handed Tom the rolled-up paper. This will be proclaimed tomorrow, if you will it.
What is it?
Tom asked, frowning.
The court of Andor lacks a proper court bard, she said. I thought you might be interested.
Tom hesitated.
You honor me, but I can't accept that. There are things I need to do in the next little while, and I can't be tied to the court.
You needn't be tied to the court, Elaine said. You'll have freedom to leave and go where you wish. But when you are in Camelin, I'd have you be known for who you are.
He took the roll of paper. I'll consider it, Elaine.
Excellent, she grimaced. I'm afraid I have an appointment with my midwife now, but I will see you at dinner. I haven't yet asked what Matram meant by calling himself a married man in his letter. I expect a full report. No expurgations,
she eyed Matt, smiling slyly.
Expurgation means parts cut out, Matt, in case you weren't bloody aware.
He put his hat on.
I knew that. What had that word been again? Expirations? Light. Why had he mentioned his marriage in that letter?
He had hoped it would make Elaine curious enough to see him. Elaine laughed, gesturing them toward the exit. Tom spared a paternal kiss for her cheek before parting. Good that it was paternal. Matt had heard some things about those two that he did not want to believe. With Tom old enough to be her grandfather, no less. Matt pulled open the door, moving to leave.
And Matt, Elaine added, if you need to borrow money to buy a new coat, the Crown can lend you some. Considering your station, you really should dress more nicely.
I'm no bloody nobleman, he said, turning.
Not yet, she said. You don't have Perrin's audacity in naming yourself to a title. I'll see that you get one.
You wouldn't dare, he said.
But,
see here, he said as Tom joined him in the hallway. I'm proud of who I am, and I like this coat. It's comfortable.
He clenched his hands into fists, refusing to scratch at his collar. If you say so, Elaine said. I will see you at dinner. I'll have to bring Dylan. She's very curious to meet you.
With that, she had Birgitta close the door. Matt stared at it vengefully for a moment, then turned toward Tom. Talmanis and the soldiers waited a short distance down the hallway, out of hearing range. They were being given warm tea by some palace servants.
That went well, Matt decided, hands on hips. I worried she wouldn't bite, but I think I reeled her in pretty well.
Though the bloody dice were still rolling in his head. Tom laughed, clapping him on the shoulder.
What?
Matt demanded. Tom just chuckled, then glanced down at the scroll in his other hand.
And this was unexpected as well.
Well, Andor doesn't have a court barred, Matt said.
Yes,
Tom said, looking over the scroll.
But there's a pardon written in here, too, for any and all crimes, known and unknown, I may have committed in Andor or Kyrian. I wonder who told her...
Told her what?
Nothing, Matt. Nothing at all. We have a few hours until dinner with Elaine. What do you say we go buy you a new coat?
All right, Matt said. You think I could get one of those pardons, too, if I asked for it?
Do you need one?
Matt shrugged, walking down the hallway with him.
Can't hurt to be safe. What kind of coat are you going to buy me anyway?
I didn't say I'd pay.
Don't be so stingy, Matt said. I'll pay for dinner.
And bloody ashes, somehow, Matt knew he would.